Hello, everybody, and welcome to Grim Scenarios. I'm your host, Milk, and with me, as always, your other host, it's Emma. What are we up to today, Emma?
Oh, not much, Milk, not much. How is it going with you?
Yeah, doing all right. It's still cold here on the East Coast, but staying warm with my nice little space heater and my little doggies, so.
It's cold here in Arizona, too, though I think that probably means something different.
Yeah, well. Hell seems to be freezing over everywhere, so it's all right. We're back with some more tier list, huh?
Mm-hmm.
This week it's going to be Sects and Violet's Townsfolk. It's kind of an interesting list. Yeah.
Yeah, 13 of the most powerful townsfolk in the game when combined together. Some extremely strong information rules here. And, again, we're not trying to rank these based on how strong they are, but rather how, like, strategically interesting they are, both within the context of S&E and generally as Clock Tower characters. So that is, like, how much choices do they have and how they approach the game, like, how much, like, different ways are there to play them, how many things you have to think about when you're doing them, that sort of questions, rather than, like, is this character the best character in Blood in the Clock Tower?
Yeah, if we were ranking characters based on strength, these would certainly be some of the townsfolk that would rank the highest. They mm-hmm. just objectively get the most powerful direct information, but Sects and Violets has, you know, complications for that in the Vortox, the Nodashi, the Vigor Mortis, some complicated outsiders.
And any case, let's start as we do when we're doing the townsfolk from the scripts, but we'll go through them in script order. So the first character on the Sex and Violet script sheet is the Clockmaker. Milk, what are your thoughts on the Clockmaker?
We should probably get the character text real quick.
Oh, yeah, the character text. The character text is, of course, you start knowing how many steps from the demon to its nearest minion.
This is a sort of similar. I think people kind of compare this to Chef quite a lot in terms of the type of information it gets. It gets information about the relative positions of evil players, but Clockmaker is more specific in that Chef collects information about nearby evils, sort of regardless of whether they're minions or demons, whereas Clockmaker is very specifically from a minion to the demon.
Yeah, which means we had the chef when we did TB down in B tier for sort of like, it's powerful, but like you sort of play it the same way. And Clockmaker's, I think, a pretty similar thing. I think it's a little more interesting than a chef because Clockmaker has a lot of like things it can be trying to hunt for in a way that chef can't, namely in an attempt to find, if it finds one evil, it has, like, there's lots of worlds it can close off with its information in a way that the chef can't necessarily just by finding a single evil. But I do think it's in that similar category of your powerful information, you start knowing it, the evil team already knows your information, you may as well just start sharing it most of the time. There's very little to be gained from hiding.
Yeah, on Sects and Violets proper, maybe the only reason to hide Clockmaker information for, like, a day is if you think it's a Vortox game or if there's a chance it's a Vortox game and evil won't know the exact number you've got. But even then, it's not. On Sects and Violets proper, it's really just information that's worth coming out with pretty quickly in the first day or two. That's information you want the town to have because it's information town's going to use to solve. It has a little bit of anti-synergy in customs with the magician in that it does allow evils to find each other more easily in magician games. So if there's a magician on your custom script and a clockmaker, you might want to hold that information at least for a day or so to let the magician do something. But again, this is information that should be coming out day one or day two most of the time. So there's not a whole lot beyond, you know, trying to find a minion and kind of trying to narrow worlds. There's not a whole lot you're going to be able to do with it beyond, you know, bluffing as a powerful role for a day and trying to get killed at night. The usual start knowing character kind of thing.
Yeah. I think it fills in a similar slot to Chef. I think it's more powerful than Chef, but I think it just slots right into B tier.
Yeah, I think it fits correctly into B tier in the same way that Chef does.
All right. Next up, of course, is our friend the Dreamer. The Dreamer's ability is, each night choose a player, not yourself or travelers. You learn one good and one evil character, one of which is correct. And just like as a design note, that not yourself or travelers is purely there because the Dreamer, if it could check travelers or themselves, would be able to do a very straightforward Vortox check. And also, travelers don't have one good and one evil character, because travelers are neither good nor evil. So it's just like, it's just preventing the Dreamer from doing very easy Vortox checks. The Dreamer is, with the customs, with TBC being sort of the core base of the game, it's often quite good to think of it with customs as, what role is a character filling? And the Dreamer is in many ways the Undertaker-like role on Sex and Violence, in that it's doing recurring character confirmation with a downside. The downside for the Undertaker is, of course, that you have to execute players to confirm them. The downside for the Dreamer is that the Dreamer never gets specifically direct information. It learns what a player could be if they're good and what a player could be if they're evil. And most of the time, a storyteller is going to have a pretty good sense of what evil players are claiming and what to show for them by day two. So, and then of course your night one pick is, or by night two, and by your night one pick is sort of random and doesn't really tell you much about the game state.
I think something interesting about Dreamer is that, especially from a strategic perspective, is that what you're trying to do with the role changes throughout the game. That is to say, on night one, you're picking randomly, you're getting some information. That's your best chance if you hit an evil to, you know, maybe the storyteller gives the wrong bluff, right? That's your sort of your best chance to find, to maybe pick out an evil. By day two or day three, the storyteller is really gonna have heard most of the evil team's bluffs, and so you're not just gonna be able to snipe an evil and get them claiming the wrong role most of the time. You might sometimes, and it's great when it happens. So what happens is, early you're trying to, you know, day one or day two, or night one or night two, you're trying to snipe an evil player, and then you...
But you're also, those are your opportunities to really confirm yourself to a good player, too,
and,
so...
And that's the thing, like, your utility, especially on Sex and Violets, shifts throughout the game. Early game, maybe you're trying to pick out an evil player, maybe you're trying to find a good player and confirm their role, get yourself confirmed, you know, whatever. You know, but mid game, you're probably happier to try to be looking for outsiders. Because, you know, when you start seeing outsiders in those roles, it may be helpful for you to help with your outsider count. Again, could be evil players, but maybe you're narrowing down what evils there are, right? There's kind of a lot of shifting of what you can kind of focus on with the Dreamer. So I think your choices do matter more as the game goes on and you have people's claims.
Yeah. I don't know if I necessarily agree that what you're trying to do in the mid-game is to find outsiders. I think what you're trying to do in the mid-game is largely to narrow worlds by figuring out whether particular players you suspect are evil or minions or demons, if evil.
That's another piece of it, for sure. I mean, but the point that I'm trying to get across is the Dreamer isn't trying to do the same thing at the beginning of the game as they are in the middle of the game, and it's usually pretty unlikely for a Dreamer to make it toward the late game, but if they do make it into the late game, you know, their function shifts a little bit throughout the game, or what they're trying to do tends to shift a little bit, or how useful that information is going to be based on who you're picking tends to shift.
Like, the big use of your information is going to be the evil role you see, because regardless of whether the evil role is true or false, I mean, false because it's a good player, true because it's an evil player, like, does a lot of world collapsing if you can figure out what type of evils you're dealing with and what evil roles are seen. If, like, someone dies from a witch curse and someone breaks Sarah Madness, and you know that those are your minions, Witch and Sarah Novus, like, Like, when you see witches and Serenovuses, you can kind of just, you know, eliminate them from your demon pool and move on to the players you're seeing as demons. And I think, like, as you, like, sort of get a sense of what demon might be in play and what people are claiming and how the other information is interacting, like, making your choices to sort of narrow worlds is going to be one of the most powerful things you can do as a dreamer. I do think Dreamer is pretty high up there in strategic interestingness. It's a choosing role. It has information that it can interpret. It has a lot of direct control over its information. I'm willing to provisionally put it in A tier, and I'm considering whether I think it should go up in S tier. But I think there's going to be some other S and B characters that are more fitting of S tier. So my inclination is to put it in A tier for now.
I think it probably goes in A tier. One other thing that I think is interesting about Dreamer is that it does have a slight meta information component as well, in that the storyteller is going to be inclined, in Sex and Violence specifically, to show minions that are on script, even if you're not looking at a minion. By which I mean, the minions are loud, so if there's a Serenovus in play, or if there's a witch in play, the storyteller's going to be inclined to show you Serenovuses and witches, to make those players potentially suspicious later. So a day one or day two information, if you do see minions, you might be able to have a little bit of meta information there that the storyteller at least wants you to think that those minions are in play. And so you might trust someone with a Serenovus claim a little more. You know, there's some other things you can kind of think about with that. So I do agree. I think it goes in A tier, that little meta information component might push it up a little bit for me, but I agree that there's a lot of characters on this script that that probably are going to be fighting for those S-tier spots.
And talking to one of those characters that I think is fighting for, is easily in that S-tier slot, and I think, I want to again remind you that this is not like, do we think this character should go on every script? Do we think this character is the most fun thing in the world? But this is a character that has a lot of strategy associated with it, and that is, of course, the Friendly Neighborhood Snake Charmer.
Yeah.
Each night, choose an alive player. A chosen demon swaps character and alignments with you and is then poisoned. And I'm just going to, on my end, toss it up in S tier and make the argument for it. And if you want to push back against that, feel free to do so. But the Snake Charmer has, like, sort of infinite variability. At its, like, core, it's, like, a sort of press-your-luck style character. Like, you want to confirm as many people as the demon as possible, but every time you confirm someone is not the demon, and then you try to go to someone else, like, you just have a slightly higher chance of losing out, that is, actually hitting the demon, switching with them, and probably being in a pretty bad situation. That's, like, the sort of one-level strategy, is when you're going to stop pressing your luck. when you think of the press your luck for variant. You can also play the Snake Charmer as sort of someone who's trying to join the evil team, which is different from how you play it if you press your luck. When the press your luck, you're trying to, like, pick people you think aren't likely to be the demons to confirm your reads are correct. When you're playing it to become evil, you're, you know, playing it to become the demon, and you're trying to, like, set up yourself so that when you become the demon, you'll be take over the demonhood without seeming like a snake charmer, too suspicious. So that's the sort of, like, aggro snake charmer, you might even say. The aggressive snake charmer is trying to become evil. But there's even other things you can do with the snake charmer.
It's one of my absolute favorite characters, and I do think, like, it belongs in S tier.
I'm a big fan as the snake charmer of trying to arrange a tie on Final 3 so I can steal the demon after the game should be over.
Mm-hmm.
It's a goal of mine. You might call this, like, a sort of meme strategy of a snake charmer, but it's you're sort of essentially trading your information to guarantee yourself a win, which is a way you can do it. It's a very strong role if evil wants to make a snake charmer. It's flexible as an evil character because it can move the demon without creating a signal that the demon has moved. Just a lot of things you can do with the character, a lot of ways you can play it. And again, a lot of people may not enjoy Snake Charmers or Snake Charmer games, but that's not what we're here about doing. And so I'm not saying, like, throw Snake Charmer in every script, but I am saying, like, it's a character that rewards players who are very careful with what they're doing and gives them a lot of different avenues to play.
I highly strategic character. One of the things I love about pulling the Snake Charmer token is it does mean that my strategy is going to change throughout the game. I'm going to start probably by picking people I think aren't the demon, regardless of whether I want to end up as the demon or not. Because, first of all, it helped me narrow down who the demon is in most cases. And second of all, it means that if I do end up pivoting and playing for the good team, I've got information to bargain in. Emma's golden ring for Snake Charmer is to arrange a tie in final three and steal the demonhood. My golden ring for Snake Charmer is to get to the end of the game as the Snake Charmer, know who the demon is, claim to have been snake charmed, and get the demon killed. I desperately want to do that personally. So I do think there's a lot of variability, and even in the same game, you can start out just playing for good, just, you know, getting some social read. You're very dependent upon your social reads and your ability to read the Grimm as well. And then as you see which way you think the game is tilting, that's when you can start to decide what you want to do. You can, if the good team seems to be doing well, you play for good, continue to try to confirm people. If the evil team seems to be winning and you're kind of like, I think my team's not doing very well, just grab that demon and try to get the win towards the end of the game. Again, it depends on how long you can survive, depends on how stable you think your bluff is. If you think you're going to get killed as the demon, probably just try to get the demon killed. If you think you've got a stable bluff and it looks like you're getting away with it, it's extremely variable depending on your circumstances. So for me, Snake Charmer, S tier, just complete variability. Every Snake Charmer game is different and has different challenges, and you really have to be paying attention to the things that other players are doing and saying, trying to read the Grimm, listening to every conversation, and just really, it's a really deep exercise in using the ability to win with either team to win. So I'm putting State Charmer in S as well, Emma. I don't... S is for Snick, you know?
Yeah. all right. Next up, one of my favorite townsfolk in Oplin and Clock Tower, one of, I think, the most interesting ways to collect information. The Mathematician, which is whose ability is, each night you learn how many players' abilities worked abnormally since dawn due to another character's ability. And I think this is the first of what we're going to talk about. There'll be a few more, mostly in the experimental section, of what you can term meta-information roles. The Mathematician isn't getting direct information about anyone's character or alignment, like most other information roles. It's getting information about the game state itself, rather than information about particular characters or their alignment. Milk, what are your sort of Mathematician initial thoughts?
Let's start on S and V, where Mathematician is, and we did a podcast episode where we talked about this extensively, and I know you have a sort of a chart that I think has been shared around a little bit. Mathematician is a fantastic demon solver on S and V specifically, because yeah. There are very specific sort of waking patterns that can eliminate specific demons, and it's
not waking patterns.
Well, there's abnormality patterns. Excuse me. Yeah, there's I was thinking about Chambermaid immediately. Abnormality patterns for the mathematician that the mathematician can read that are going to provide you with information that's going to help you solve the demon. And solving the demon is super important on Sex and Violets. So it's crucial there. It's interesting to me how many players I feel like think it's kind of a throwaway middle of the road role when it's genuinely so important, that information it gets. I was just going to say really quickly, outside of Sex and Violets, there's a lot of things that can be messy interactions for Mathematician. They can be fun, but there's definitely things that start to make it pretty tricky to solve out your numbers. On Sex and Violence, it's brilliant.
It also, off Sex and Violence, though, if the script's not well supportive for it, the Mathematician can just, like, gain goaded information pretty quickly.
Yeah.
even on S&P, like, the three math numbers you're really caring about most of the time are 0, 1, and 2. Like, there's situations where higher math numbers can occur. We think technically, excluding Vortox, you can get, you know, three math abnormalities from a vigor, one from a sweetheart, one from a philosopher for 5, and maybe, I don't think there's actually a way to get a 6 there. I guess there's a sick way you can get a 6th if a vigor kill pit hack then creates a good demon. Maybe you can go up to a 7 if both demons fail to kill because of the good demon's creation. But, like, that's pretty contrived. Like, Vigor's killing all three of their minions is pretty contrived.
Yeah.
Vigor's, the good demon situation is pretty rare. Like, most of the time you're talking about a 0, 1, or 2. And most of the time, 2s are only going to show up in no dashy games. And 0s are, and Fengus, of course, are going to have trouble getting above 0. So really you're looking at the 0 to 2 range. But, yeah, like, I've seen a lot of bluffs, especially in Vortox games, blow up because the math can't get a number that aligns with what evil's bluffing.
Oh, yeah.
It's a role that rewards sort of really getting a good sense of the game state, which is one of the things we look at in strategy. It is a passive role, which is sort of a downgrade for strategy purposes, but it's like the social play that the mathematician needs to go to maximize the role, and their understanding of what numbers mean in different situations, I think, does get it up pretty high there. I think, again, because S&V is so weird, my initial inclination is to drop this in A, but I could be convinced for as much like I was with Dreamer.
I think it definitely fits in A tier. Maybe we revisit it just at the very end of this and see if we think it goes up at the end. The thing about mathematician that I think is fascinating is you really have to get a good sense of the game. It's one of those things that I think can be counterintuitive to less experienced players. The idea that you've got a passive role, but you can't play passively, right? A lot of these passive roles, you get information, but you can't just sit there and sort of collect information and do nothing. You've got to get out and get claims and try to get people to give you some true information. You got to figure out if the Philo picked an in-play role. You know, you've got to see who has information that is consistently seeming wrong when you're getting math numbers that show abnormalities. I think it's really critical that you're paying attention to what other people are saying, and that's going to be the nature of all of the sort of quote unquote meta information roles that we look at, even in the experimentals. I think math for now, maybe we slot it in A, and then we'll revisit it depending on what S tier looks like.
All right, next up is the Flower Girl. The Flower Girl is. Ability is each night you learn if a demon voted today.
I want to, just before we get into Flower Girl and Town Crier, which are the next two characters, these roles have substantial variance depending on what format you're playing the game in. Flower Girl and Town Crier are substantially easier to track information for in a text game than they are in an online game, where it is substantially easier to track than in an in-person game. And so it is worth mentioning that Sex and Violets with a Flower Girl and a Town Crier on the Grim in person is going to have a very different experience than online or in a text game. I just wanted to mention that just because of the nature of the information and how difficult it can genuinely be to track it.
Yeah. What I would say is I think, like, strategy-wise, it's pretty low strategy any which way. There's a little things you can do about trying to, like, marshal votes so that people don't, like, you know, mess up, make your information harder to get, which I guess gives it some level of intrigue, but mostly, like, you're just trying to get different splits than you got the day before. So, like, even then, like, beyond, besides, like, sort of whining in public about how people should be careful of the roads because of the flower girl, like, there's not much there. You're just trying to marshal people to vote differently each day, so you can create smaller and smaller groups of who can be the demon. It's the fortune teller of SNV, but it's a much more passive version of the fortune teller. I think some people were critical of us putting the fortune teller in B tier. I'm going to tell you, I think we were right, but I think Flower Girl is much less strategic, so I just want to drop it straight in C tier.
I think it probably goes in C tier, and I am going to just like make a slight argument for it to be in B tier, even though I don't necessarily agree with that, because I have genuinely, personally, tried to milk every ounce of strategic play out of Flower Girl and Town Crier. And Emma, I think you probably remember this game where I basically begged you to just not vote one day, knowing that almost everyone else was going to vote, and used the Flower Girl to just clear you of being the demon one day, which ended up being useful information. But barring doing some really strange stuff where you're just kind of trying to sneakily clear one person and doing a lot of lying, because that's the other thing that's useful with Flower Girl and Town Crier, is lying about the information that you've gotten or who has voted or who has nominated, sort of the same way you would as a minion when you're playing those two characters, to try to obscure the fact that you've gotten useful information so you can keep getting information. I still think it goes in C tier. I think it, like, there are some interesting things you can do with it, but I don't think you can do them every time. It depends on the group you're playing with. It's hard. I'm going to put it in C tier.
Yeah, that's where it belongs.
Yeah. It definitely belongs in C tier. I just wanted to give that extra little thought. Like, there are some interesting things you can do with both of these characters. We could probably just move on to Town Crier. There's going to be a similar opinion here, I think.
Yeah, I think Town Crier is very similar to its thematic cousin, the Flower Girl, where the Flower Girl tracks votes for demons. The Town Crier's ability is each night you learn of a minion nominated today. Yeah.
Just not a whole lot to say, is there?
It's very similar to Flower Girl. Like, you want to get different splits on who's nominating because that helps you, like, you know, create world buckets easier.
The worse information you get, the longer you might live.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You can be, like, the person who solves evil twins, which I guess makes you important, but, like, it doesn't make what you're doing more, like, in-depth or interesting. It's just sort of there.
Most of the time, both twins are going to vote. If both twins don't vote, start looking at Vortox Worlds. Like,
yeah, I mean, nominate.
Yeah, nominate, sorry, yeah, excuse me, yeah.
The TC just, it's, like, and because, like, you don't really care about learning one player is not a minion, like, in a lot of senses, like, Town Crier, even that thing Milk was talking about, where you can try to marshal learning that a single person isn't the demon, doesn't even apply to Town Crier, because you don't really care to learn that one person specifically isn't a minion.
Is it?
I think it's D.
Is it lower than Flower Girl? I just realized. I think you're right.
I think it's like a very versatile role. I think it makes a lot of scripts hum well, but like as the Town Crier player, there's just not much you have to do or think about. You just have to sort of take your notes or try to remember who's nominating and, you know, marshal your information, but you don't have a lot of choice at work in doing so.
Yeah, I just don't, you know, I've tried. I've tried to get every drop out of it I can, but I just don't, I don't know that it goes anywhere but D tier. Fortunately, we have some exciting ones now.
Next up is the Oracle. The Oracle is each night you learn how many dead players are evil. The Oracle has, like, really important work to do in sort of tracking the activities of demons like Fangoos and Vigor Mortises and Vortoxes. Milk, where do you sort of think of it strategically?
I think something that is really important to me as a Clock Tower player, as a Clock Tower storyteller, and also as a, you know, we run a community together, and we, you know, we kind of created best practices for that community that encourage people to talk to dead players. I love roles that encourage people to talk to dead players. And I think the Oracle is exactly one of those roles. Strategically, I think you need to be spending your time, especially on SNV, figuring out if the information you're getting at night is coherent with the world that you're building, right? It might help you locate a Nodashi if your reads on who the minions are different than what the information you're getting is. Maybe you got a Nodashi, maybe you got a Vortox, maybe you've got a Vigor-killed minion near you, right? Maybe your sweetheart drunk. There's a lot of misinformation detection, I think, that the Oracle can try to do by paying attention to their reads on the rest of the information, who they think is a dead evil. But simultaneously, you could just go talk to those players, and by going and talking to those players, you can either get reads that reinforce what you believe, or you could get reads that make you question your information. And I think that's just an interesting play pattern in general. And any role that encourages people to talk to the dead is always going to be a little bit higher in my book because it keeps other players engaged in the game.
Yeah. In terms of strategy, again, it's another passive role. I think it's somewhere between the mathematician and flower girl in, like, the sort of strategy you have to use to think about your information. One of your jobs at the Oracle is to be the person who tells town you're losing.
Yeah.
So that's, like, a very important role. Like, if you keep getting zeros, you should start getting scared, especially if your neighbors aren't dead, because then it doesn't look like it's a Vigor Mortis thing.
mm-hmm.
Like, in a Vortox aim, you should start getting not zeros eventually. Or you start a Vortox aim, you're going to get not zeros immediately. Like if you're never getting, if your numbers are staying at zero, so you sort of, like, your role is sort of like the, hold up, we're on the wrong track here character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think forces you to think of, like, a little more about how you're outing your information and when you're sharing it and what you're trying to do. I don't think it's as, like, in-depth as mathematician, because, like, even if you're playing pretty passively, you can still get your important information pretty easily. I think it is more so than Flower Girl. My inclination is B tier for the Oracle.
I agree with the Oracle as B tier strategically. One other important thing to remember, as you mentioned about, like, being the warning town, warning for town character that, hey, we haven't killed people, is if you've got players who are saying they think they've killed people, they've killed evils, who are pushing hard on people who are dead as being evil, you've got that information, and you may want to start looking at people who are vociferously saying, oh, no, there's no dead evils, we're fine to go to sleep, you know, things like that. Definitely B tier. It's got some stuff it can do, but it's not, there's, you know, ultimately it's passively learning about the dead and trying to confirm if that information is right or not, and keeping town from hopefully going to a all evil final three.
Yeah. Here with all that, next up is our savant, character that some people really love and some people really hate, both playing and running. The savant's ability is, each day you may visit the storyteller to learn two things in private. One is true, one is false. Milk, you got any initial savant thoughts that I can play off of?
I mean, S was for Snek. For me, S is going to be for savant again.
Mm. I'm going to argue against that, but we'll let you make your case first.
This is one of those that's probably going to be a little bit storyteller dependent, but it is, from my perspective, one of the roles that has to do the most work of collecting information from other players and trying to combine it with their own. It's information that is not only going to have a confirmatory effect, your true statement, but also you're going to get information out of the false statement, and you're going to be using that to create and dismiss multiple different worlds. And your job is to find the people whose information fits with each of those worlds and see which worlds are true and which worlds are false. So you're doing a ton of world building as the savant by stacking statements on top of one on top of the other and then gathering the information that fits with each portion of your savant statements. Feel free to hit that with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, there's nothing really distinguishing the savant from the mathematician and the dreamer in what you just said. Like, the savant's information sounds more exciting because it's custom-crafted, it's always different, it's always unique. At the end of the day, it's like a very similar strategic slot to the dreamer and the mathematician. In that, your information is sort of... It's interesting, it's, like, important to talk to other people and figure things out. It can close worlds, it can expand worlds. You have to work hard socially to solve it. But at the end of the day, it's still in that same bucket of, there's stuff you need to do, but it's not stuff that's, like, super you-driven. So I tend to think of it more A-tier, like the dreamer and the mathematician. I also think, like, I do think the one thing with savant is I think is a plus over those other two, but I don't think enough for me to move it up to S tier in my head, is the savant sort of, it does have a bit of a press your luck element to it, which is curious, which is that, you know, if you can hide better as the savant, if you want to avoid, like, a demon saying, oh, there's a savant, I want to kill it, if you sort of, like, try to sneak your conversation with the storyteller in during the day, during the early parts of the day when the evil team's not looking, but the storyteller is going to have more information and therefore can craft more interesting information for you the later in the day you wait. But if you wait to get your information until, like, just before the storyteller gets their countdown from 5 to 1 before to the end of the day, it's going to be pretty obvious that you're doing that every day and you're this savant. And also, you can't use that information for that day's nomination. So, like, the timing of when you go get your information and how much risk you take in exposure of making it obvious you're the savant versus giving the storyteller the most they can gather with the game state to give you interesting information, I do think, like, is a sort of interesting hidden press-your-luck element to this font. But for me, like I said, I think there's characters that are going to need to go in S tier that are coming up on S and D, so I think this font just isn't one of them for me.
Yeah, that's fair. We can put it into A and then see how it goes from here. From my perspective, just the amount of information, you know, we did that episode with the solving out the savant statements as the trying to find the mutant who was jumped to by the Fangu. That's kind of led me on a merry chase for, I guess, quite a long time, almost 2 years now, of thinking about how deeply savant information can impact games and how important it is to solve it out and get it out to your trusted townsfolk. But I'm happy to leave it in A tier. It's probably similarly important to get out, you know, and try to get connected to other information as math. So I'm happy to leave it next to math.
Okay. Next up is the seamstress. The seamstress is a character that's ability is once per game at night, choose 2 players, not yourself. You learn if they are the same alignment.
Big press your luck energy. Like, it's a big press your luck energy character. That's the big thing here. That's going to elevate it above, like, the information that it gets is very binary.
I think it hangs out in A tier. It's a press your luck character.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we've talked about press your luck character townsfolk before with, like, the Slayer, where it's like press your luck is sort of inherently strategically interesting. It can get extremely important information. Like, it's one of the townsfolk that can sort of solo solve twin pairs, which, you know, is always something you have to consider. But on the other hand, like, because of the philosopher, which we're going to talk about soon, like, it also has that sort of, maybe you should use it so then you can get a second seamstress thing from the philosopher. lots of stuff going on with the seamstress, lots of choices in how it approaches the game.
Yeah, it's just a lot of different options of how to use it, of how long to wait, of what that information, you know, how that information fits together with the bigger puzzle of the game. One of the most fun things that can happen is typically seamstress yeses are going to be seen as confirming two good players, just more likely to hit two good players. And seamstress noes obviously is going to be, you know, one good player and one evil, and people are going to want to kill into seamstress noes. But one of the fun things that can happen is you can get a seamstress yes on a pair of evil players. And that can often make the game very, very interesting. Trying to sort out what your seamstress yes means. Most people will just hard trust a seamstress yes, but it does have that interesting aspect that the obvious solution to your information might not necessarily be the right one. So I do think there's a lot. I think there's a lot in seamstress, and I think it just goes into A tier very easily.
Yeah. Next, we're going to hit the philosopher. The philosopher's ability is once per game at night, choose a good character, gain that ability. If this character is in play, they are drunk. I guess my sort of feeling here is, by definition, the philosopher is the character of literally unlimited choices. It has the choices of all the characters of all the different strategically interesting levels, from the powerful but dull to the powerful but easy to use, to the hard to use and a little weaker, to the hard to use and powerful. It has all those choices. Like, there's even reasons for philosopher to choose outsider characters to sort of protect those outsiders. Phyla Mutant, I really want to emphasize, in my mind, is not a meme. I mean, it is for some people, but it's also, like, an incredibly, like, useful thing to do. If you are worried that a mutant is towing the lines, you can prevent their execution. Phylo Damsel, not an S&V interaction, of course, but Phylo Damsel is something that can...
Yeah, it can literally save your game. It can save your team.
Save your game. Phylo Klutz, even. If you think you're about to get killed and you want to go Phylo Klutz and you think you have someone you can trust, in some ways that's a more powerful choice than, like, even Phylo Sage. Because the Klutz isn't subject to any of the misinformation on S&V. Like, so many things you can do with the philosopher. So many different ways you can play it. Like, you can think, like, you can double up on clockmakers by waiting to night two. You can find a seamstress and figure out how you're going to split up your seamstress, your Phylo and your seamstress and your normal seamstress over a few days. Like, oh my god, the philosopher has a wealth of strategic choices. Including, of course, the classic Phylo Snake, which has all the choices of a snake charmer.
I mean, it could just be a snake charmer, so it has to go into S, right?
Yeah, I, like, gosh, I think it's, like, an incredibly easy S in my mind.
Yeah, of course
it is. Just because it literally, any townsfolk, it can be any townsfolk, and any outsider, the ones that are useful to have and ones non-useful to have. It's just a wild character like that.
It's all of the strategy.
You need to say that I haven't just said in that sort of...
Yeah, it's all of the strategy of all of the other characters, plus the layer of strategy on top of it of which character do I pick and why, plus another layer of strategy on top of that of what can I use my drunkenness to, can I use my Phylo drunking to do something useful? Like, it's so layered. We're just going to death tier. It's the most strategic, it's probably the most strategic townsfolk. Like, it's just kind of by definition.
It's the ultimate jack of all trades. In that, it's not even sacrificing efficiency at what it's doing. It's just doing everything. Talking about the jack of all trades who does sacrifice efficiency, though, who doesn't do everything quite as well as everyone else, but does everything, let's talk about the artist. The artist's ability is once per game during the day, privately ask the storyteller any yes or no question. What are your thoughts here? I've done a little bit of ranting about these characters.
Artist is incredibly strategic. It's probably going to go into S tier. Anything where you can craft your own information is already going to have a massive strategic aspect because it's up to you what question you're going to be asking and how you're going to frame that question to try to get information. I'm not going to get into like trying to Vortox-proof questions or asking like complex questions or, you know, compound questions.
All that stuff is sort of just dumb.
Yeah, it's actually, I think, overthinking the power that the artist has and how useful it can be to get some just straightforward and useful information. You can just get a friend. Right? Like it can be like a better ogre. You know, you could just get a friend and say, is this person evil? Is this person the demon? Are my neighbors good? You know, like there's a ton of things you can do with it. You can ask about other players' information. You can ask about meta information. Anything that you can craft into a yes or no question and get an answer for. And then on top of all that, and just on top of what the ability does, it once again has that press your luck element of the later you wait to use it, the more information you have, the more ability you will have to craft your question in an interesting way that allows you to get the info that you want. And then there's another thing with S&V where because artist's information is binary, if you do end up in a Vortox game, you can craft your question in such a way that getting a yes and then finding out it's a Vortox game or getting a no and then finding out it's a Vortox game, you know, you're just reversing your info. So your info is still useful, right? So it's one of those things where, again, a little bit like the Philo, there's several strategic layers here, and the question you ask is sort of just the baseline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got so much going on. One thing I do want to say is some people are always like, is an artist just a strictly better seamstress? Yes and no. The artist obviously can just choose to get seamstress information and also choose to get different information if that information is more useful. But, like, the seamstress has the advantage of getting to use its ability secretly at night rather than publicly during the day, which is a boon that the artist doesn't have. The artist does have to visit the storyteller and risk exposing themselves as the artist. And, you know, once the artist has their information, they become a lower priority kill target because so you're not going to be able to like protect more powerful roles like you can as a seamstress. So I just did want to flag that.
Yeah, I think that's worth flagging because spent once per game roles do have that additional strategic quality of being able to soak kills from the evil team after they're spent. I'm trying to read that way. But that's sort of more general character strategy, I think, than any of the specifics. Maybe we should at some point talk about general character strategy for the different types of roles. That's worth thinking about.
All right. Next, we're going
to
pull up.
So that went into S tier. I forgot to move it up into S tier. There it is. It's up there.
Like, and, you know, artist and philosopher were the characters I was thinking of when I was resisting dreamer, mathematician, and savant up in S tier. Yeah. This was, like, I just don't think they have the strategic depth of artist, philosopher, snake charmer.
By comparison, certainly.
Yeah, like I like obviously like we're they're all very interesting characters, but I don't think they're just a little bit behind. Next up is the juggler. The juggler is on your first day, publicly guess up to 5 players' characters. That night you learn how many you got correct.
So there's a big aspect of choice here. And there's also an aspect of what information you share publicly and how you can hide your juggle well enough to actually get the information and not get picked out as the juggler. It is one of my favorite things to do in a game as a good player or as an evil player is listen to the juggles and figure out which ones are real. Just as a side note, if you're going to fake juggle something that sounds plausible. It will help the juggler more than fake juggling a meme, you know, of everybody being the demon or something.
I mean, yeah. It's a craft your own information role, in that sense it's super interesting. Like, it's also a role that I think, like, has an interesting interplay with the sort of quote-unquote online meta versus the quote-unquote clock tower as intended meta. And just what I mean by that is the clock tower sort of as intended meta, the way, like, it was envisioned is everyone sort of stays in the circle. You might, like, go off and have a private whisper in the circle, but you're all staying in the circle. Most conversation is public. Most, by which I mean most people are there and listening to it. There's, like, the online meta, of course, is heavily influenced by both the Ben Burns meta, which Ben Burns introduced the game, or not introduced the game, but was a big part of the popularization of the game in England, and he hosted it in bar spaces where, like, you needed to leave the circle if you wanted to have private conversations. And he then became the principal online storyteller, and in all the online tools that have ever existed, you know, private conversations have dominated over the public conversation in terms of how information is shared. Not to say, like, in Clock Tower's intent, there aren't private conversations, but there are fewer of them.
I think,
and, like, the juggler has, like, the sort of weird aspect where, like, five private conversations is a lot to get to day one. Like, that's a lot of day one private conversations. And if you're having five day one private conversations, they're probably not particularly useful conversations. Which I think hurts the juggler a bit in the sort of traditional online meta. One thing I think jugglers can think about is the timing of the day when they juggle. You'll see, like, the pitter-patter of games sort of be, especially in online and in online-influenced in-person games, be storyteller wakes everyone up. There's X number of minutes where you all go off and have private conversations. Then you all come back to the circle. The public claim stuff happens. The nominations happen. The execution happens, you go to sleep. I don't think as a juggler you want to be making your juggle before nominations. I think you want to make your juggle as close to the end of the day as possible. And
yeah,
I think if you want to cover for a juggle, you should be making your covered juggle as close to the end of the day as possible. You want to gain as much information as possible. And you're going to gain more information about who, what characters people might be after you listen to the nomination phase. So I'm not saying, like, storytellers should cut off the asking for public stuff. Though I have personally how I storytell. I don't, like, when I call people back to town, I'm like, this is your time. You can nominate people. You can talk. You can do public stuff. If you need my attention for something, let me know. But I think for the juggler in particular, more so than the other public claim roles, you really do want to wait until the nomination period has happened a bit. And ideally until it's all happened.
Yeah, I've shifted my storytelling style in a similar way to just allowing town to do whatever they're going to do and really not doing much management at all of that. Once I say the words, nominations are open. Not really worrying about what order people do things in. I did want to mention about the juggler. You mentioned about the sort of clock tower as intended world where sort of everybody's in the middle of the circle or sitting in their chairs. And so the juggler getting private claims that nobody can hear is tricky. But I think crucially, the juggler does have to think about if you trust someone's claim and you think they might be targeted by the demon, you do want to think about how you present that claim when you are juggling. And making public statements is a place where there's a strategic element to how you say things that can be very helpful. So there is strategy in the juggler of how you use your vocal intonation when you are juggling, how you say the things that you are, you know, the five roles that you're picking and the people. There's also a lot of, like, fake outs you can do if you find someone who has a Demon Bane role and you juggle them as a powerful townsfolk. You know, there's a lot of things you can do. So, I mean, for me, juggler really does fit into A tier because it is one of those roles that crafts their own information, and there's a lot of different ways you can use that, even if you don't get, certainly if you don't get five claims. It also has the ability to solve Twin and to some extent solve Vortox on SNV proper. So those are considerations. If you really don't get information you like, you might be able to hunt into those sorts of those sorts of situations. So I think it goes into A tier. The limitation, of course, being that it really just does something at the very beginning of the game,
And
it does have to hide quite a bit when it's doing that.
Yeah, I think since the juggler doesn't have any sort of press or luck element, I think that holds it back from making S tier, but I think it's a fascinating and, I think, undervalued character a lot of the time.
Yeah. It's one I think people think is a throwaway, but I do think it's quite strong and quite
juggler numbers can easily solve games.
Yeah. Get that juggler five, y'all. Go out there and get your juggler fives.
Juggler twos and threes can also solve games.
Like, oh, yeah. No, absolutely. But I'm just saying, the dream's out there.
Yeah. Anyway, our last and final SNV townsfolk is, of course, the Sage. If the demon kills you, you learn that it is one of two players. When we did TB, we put our TB Demonsbane, the Ravenkeeper, up in S tier, and our other TB Demonsbane, the Soldier, down in C tier. So I want to emphasize we're not Demonsbanes can have their own strategy choices.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Sage goes down with the Soldier in C tier, though.
It does go down with the Soldier in C tier. And the difference between Sage and Ravenkeeper is the passivity of Sage, right? It just gets the information. It doesn't get to choose. That decision-making that the Ravenkeeper has to do, that knowledge of the Grim that you have to have, the social reads that you have to have, et cetera, it just makes the Ravenkeeper much more strategic. The Sage just sits there, claims Dreamer or Mathematician or Oracle or something, gets killed in the mid game and tries to, and then says one of these two people is the demon. It's there's no strategy and almost no strategy involved. The strategy is involved in trying to get killed in the night.
Yeah, and trying to get killed, and you want to be killed. You don't want to be killed too late because then there's not time to kill both your pings. You don't want to get killed too early because SMB has lots of ways for the demon to move. So there is that sort of, how do I sort of target that 7 or 8 players alive, the 8 player alive night when there's enough time to kill both my pings and not enough time for the demon to move. That sort of range for the Sage. Waking up on 6 alive to hear that you've been, or 6 or 5 alive to hear that you've announced as the dead is the Sage is the perfect amount of time. Because, just kill one, kill the other. You've probably already got all the movement out of the way. You're golden. Unless you think it's Vortox. But it's very passive. There's ways you can make it interesting, but it's passive. Also, remember that not dying as the Sage and being alive in Final 3 also tells you that one of two players is the demon.
Yeah, and you can play it the same way we talked about playing Ravenkeeper as a, just gain as much trust as possible role.
The Sage information is invaluable. But, the simple act of being alive in Final 3 as a good player gives you Sage information. So, even, dying isn't really all that important to the Sage. You don't gain anything from dying that night than you do from staying alive. You just don't want to be executed as the Sage.
Saw a game last night on the server with a Klutz confirmed Sage. It's pretty good.
But I think it goes on to C tier. So let's just sort of recap SNV. On SNV, we had our S tier characters, Snake Charmer, Philosopher, and Artist. We had our A tier characters, Dreamer, Mathematician, Savant, Seamstress, Juggler. We had our B tier characters, Clockmaker, Fortune Teller, Oracle. Our C tiers, Town Crier, and Sage. And our C tier was Flower Girl and Sage, and our D tier was Town Crier. I'm pretty happy with that distribution.
Did you say fortune teller?
Our TB distribution.
Did you say fortune teller in B tier?
No. Oh, sorry. Clockmaker and Oracle.
Clockmaker and Oracle. Okay, yeah.
We have one more S tier and one more A tier townsfolk than we did for TB. We have one fewer B tier. Is that right? Am I miscounting something?
No, I think we have one fewer B tier.
One fewer B tier. Ah, right. It's one fewer B tier, one more S tier, which I think makes sense for the script.
Makes sense with
the difference between the script differences. I'm pretty happy with this list, Milk, but I know you wanted Savant up in S tier. So any final arguments you want to make?
I don't have a final argument for it. You know, we intend to sort of revisit the whole list when we get to the end, and maybe when we get to the very end, you know, we'll have some friends critique this. Yeah,
criticize us and try to argue with us. I think that's the way I want to do it, at least.
Yeah, and I might see if I can. I might see if I can build an argument for Savant between here and there. yeah. Hey, we did it. We got through SMV. That means next up's BMR.
Yep, and then the experimentals, which might be two episodes.
That's probably going to have to be two episodes. All right, everybody. Well, until the next time.
Oh, and we'll also have to. There was some minions and maybe even demons. Definitely minions.
We have to circle back for wizard. We need to re-rank wizard.
We need to do wizard. I know we need to do wizard. I know we need to do
Zahn? I think we need to do Zahn.
I don't know if we did Boffin. I think we did Boffin. We did Boffin. Lord Typhon and...
Yeah, so we might have some... We'll have some finishing up to do at the end.
Yeah, and we may do Travelers or may not do Travelers.
I think Travelers might just be a bit of a fun... You know, that'd be a bit of a fun one to do.
But yeah, we do want to get these last ones out then, get some guests on to sort of debate our choices with, which I think will be fun.
I'm looking forward to that part.
Yeah.
All right, Emma. Until next time, everybody, may your scenarios stay grim.
Yep. Bye-bye.
See ya.